Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by DraftKings.com, because whether you're golf's biggest fan or you're just ready to try a new fantasy sport, you could play 1 week fantasy golf for free every week at DraftKings.com. Just pick out six golfers before a tournament tees off, stay under the salary cap, and rack up points for streaks, per hole performance, tournament finishes, and more. Outscore the competition and you could win. Only DraftKings brings the excitement of golf to this level with every monster drive and every made putt bringing you closer to victory. And DraftKings offers more than just fantasy golf. Choose from a variety of sports to showcase your winning skills like baseball, soccer, and even MMA. Millions of sports fans just like you have discovered DraftKings. Now it's your turn to get in on the action for free. This is not fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Fantasy golf contests begin when tournaments tee off, so hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your golfers and be sure to use the promo code ROB to play for free. That's promo code ROB to play for free now only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cicerino back here once again to talk about why the latest Survivor player lost. And, of course, that would be our good buddy Nick, who is out of the game. And here to talk about it is the man who wrote the Survivor rulebook many years ago when he first created Reality News Online. Here is the great David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Very excited. I've been seeing on Twitter... You've been very busy this week.
Yes, I have.
Yes, you've been very active and doing a lot of the Lord's work out there on social media.
Lord Jeff Probst?
Yes.
Or, Lord.
Yes. Going back to when Russell Swan called Jeff Probst God back in Survivor Philippines. I forget if he called him God or Lord, but something like that. All right, but... Excited to be back once again. David, how are you doing?
Good. And, congratulations to you. Your prediction came true, even though you were just predicting it to try to jinx Steven. So I guess the jinx part didn't work.
Yeah, the reverse jinx did not save Nick, unfortunately. I was hoping that it would, but I didn't really see too many other people that I felt like I could make a case one way or the other, so I just thought I'd try to save him, but it did not work. Okay, so I'm not Spider-Man, not saving anybody, but anyway, let's talk about Nick and why he lost according to your seven rules and two appendices that you've written about the Survivor Handbook. So David, where do you want to start?
Well, as you mentioned, I've been very active on Twitter. A lot of that was about our discussion from last week about what was going on in the plan against Neil before he was medevaced. So what happened was, you know, Nick being voted out led to his interviews, which included him talking to you about what the plan would have been if Neil had stuck around. Meanwhile, Neil listened to our podcast from last week, and I have to say he described my voice as being soothing like warm milk.
Oh.
And I'm going to take that as canon.
Does that go into making ice cream? Is that you need cold milk for that?
I don't know. Maybe you warm it up first so you can mix all the ingredients.
He's the dairy expert, so I'll leave it to him.
That's right. That's why it's canon.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he said on Twitter that he had disagreed with the idea that he was being voted out if he hadn't been medevaced.
Mm-hmm.
So I pointed out to him that Nick had said, you know, on the interview that this was going to happen. So he goes off and texts Nick, and mm-hmm. they have a back and forth discussion, which Neil then posted to Twitter with Nick's permission, of course.
Okay.
And in that discussion, Nick now was saying they were all confused and didn't understand the rules, thinking that a tie of four votes for Aubrey, four for whomever the brains were targeting, and three for Neil would have resulted somehow in a revote for which they could have targeted Neil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how they would have gotten that confused, but that's what he said.
Okay, because it would be a 4-4-3 vote. In that situation, it would turn out to be a tiebreak vote between Aubrey and whoever the brains would put their votes on. In Neil's exit interview with us, he said that it would be probably Jason. So then the people on the side with seven would probably all then vote for Aubrey in that scenario.
Right. So that led to a long discussion between me and Neil about, okay, how could they have come to this thinking? And in the end, the only possible situation I could come up with involved basically tricking Neil into thinking he was safe so he wouldn't play his idol and then putting 4 votes on him. Since Nick claimed that there were only supposed to be 3, that either means he was misremembering, because after all, it was a year ago that they, you know, were actually out there, or the bronze had misled him, which was something I had hypothesized about last week.
Mm-hmm.
But Neil stood firm that he was never in danger, according to what he saw going on out there and, you know, what Nick now confirmed. And if both of them had the full picture, he was right.
If I could just here interject, one, every survivor always thinks that their plans were going to work no matter what. That there's very few survivors that say, I had this plan, but in hindsight, it wasn't going to work. So every survivor has more confidence in what they were going to do than ultimately happens in practice, as we see all the time, because people get blindsided very frequently in the game. Plans don't work and everything doesn't go according to the script that we come up with in our heads. And also, two, and so that's could be part of the reason why we have a disconnect here between various different accounts of what was going on here at the merge. And number two, I have to give Neil a lot of credit for the patience to get into this and the conviction in what he's saying, because I think that if it was something that he did not feel so strongly about, then, you know, he would have let this go a long time ago or tried to change the subject. So I'm prone to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I agree that, you know, I'm glad he was willing to go into this discussion and have it. But wait, there's more.
Okay.
So after that whole discussion, Jason sent me a direct message on the same topic.
All right.
So I had a private Twitter press conference with him.
Yes. Is this on the record or off the record?
It was on the record. He just didn't want to be limited to 140 characters.
Okay.
So he said that despite what Nick said, the plan was always to put 4 votes on Neil and 3 on Aubrey, but to convince Neil he wasn't in danger, so he wouldn't use the idol. He said that they knew Neil wouldn't play it and that they were so sure about their plan to make it look like Aubrey was the target, they were willing to roll the dice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if something would have slipped, like, I don't know, Ty saying something he shouldn't have at tribal council.
I can't imagine a scenario like that.
No, that's just not possible. But, you know, if we're just reaching for hypotheticals, then he and Scott knew where the idols were if they needed them. Jason added he thinks it's possible Nick's memory is a little scrambled after a year, but he also noted that information was given out on a need-to-know basis, and Nick didn't need to know.
Yeah.
It seems like only himself, Scott, Sydney, and Ty knew the full plan, presumably because they were the ones voting for Neil. He didn't spell that out, but I mean, that's sure what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
He said that they were willing to gamble at that time. He knows that Neil disagrees, but he says Neil was on the outs with the majority, so he really had no way of knowing what was truly going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you balance these stories out, and what it comes down to is nobody knows or ever will know what really would have happened.
Right.
I think it could have gone down the way Jason described it, or Ty or someone else could have said something suspicious, and Neil could have decided at the last minute to play the idol, leading to a whole different set of circumstances. I think that somewhere in an alternate universe, all of these things have happened. But until we figure out how to jump to parallel Earths like they do on The Flash, you know, we'll never know for sure.
Right. It's almost like some sort of like a baseball game that got rained out after 7 innings where it's like, you know, Jason saying like, well, we were going to win because we were winning 4-3 going into the top of the 8th. And Neil's like, well, no, but what you didn't know is that, you know, I had this guy on the bench and then I had these guys coming up and then, you know, the momentum had shifted. And so we were going to win the game. So it wasn't like you think you were going to win, but you weren't. And we just don't have any way. You know, it's an incomplete round of play.
Right, right. So that's what we have on last week. But that wasn't the only Twitter activity.
Oh, my God. There's more?
There's more, bringing us up to this week. Because, you know, Nick, in his interview, seemingly answered everyone's question as to why Ty voted Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was following an outdated plan.
Yes.
But I asked Ty about it on Twitter, and he said, no, Nick's wrong.
Oh.
No.
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 Ha ha ha. Yeah, he actually said Nick was in a different reality. So maybe it was one of those parallel Earths I was talking about.
Yeah. Or was he on like an Oculus Rift or something? The yeah, Oculus Nick? Yeah.
You know, although Ty did say, well, unless my memory is failing already. But Ty wouldn't actually answer the question except to say that Nick was wrong. He just said he couldn't say any more because he let too many cats out of the bag in that episode already.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Okay, so he vehemently disagrees with Nick's reasoning about how that the vote was either going to be Nick or Jason and that they did not fill Ty in on the plan. He says that is not the case. So we will see ultimately, I guess, moving forward, and presumably this week, why did Ty vote for Jason?
Well, I hope so, yes.
Okay, all right. Lots of intrigue heading into the live know-it-alls.
Hopefully it'll be a good one for you.
Yeah, hopefully. I think so. I think the stage is set. We've never done it this late in the season, so I think we got a lot to talk about. We haven't done a post-merge one of these yet, so it would be exciting.
Right, right. Well, you know, this episode was supposed to be really exciting because Tribal Council was supposed to blindside us.
Yeah.
I still have no idea what the PR people who made that commercial were thinking, because to me, that episode pretty well led us down the path directly to Nick getting voted out. It was a blindside for Nick, but I don't think it was a blindside for the viewers, unless the blindside was them telling us we'd be blindsided and then not getting blindsided as a reverse blindside.
It also was an episode titled The Jocks Versus the Pretty People, which we talked about at the end of the episode that we did last week, at the end of the podcast we did last week. And it's also that line I don't believe was even said in the episode, and it also did not fit in what the description was. So really just kind of an oddly marketed episode.
Yeah, I heard, I think it was Nick saying the jocks and the pretty people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I heard him say that and I thought, okay, I don't hear a versus. Let's wait and see where it comes later. And then I never heard it.
Yeah. So odd stuff going around. Maybe it was all the Batman versus Superman stuff that maybe they felt like they were going to sort of like fly in behind drift on their marketing. Well, the drift or draft? I think it's draft, right?
Yes, draft.
Like Tokyo drift. But then you draft right behind somebody.
That's right. That's right. The racing analogy there.
Showing off all of my racing acumen.
Yes.
And not what I talk about with Jessica Lease on Fridays.
Right. Okay. Different race entirely.
All right. So are you ready to get into Nick?
Yeah, I am. And I'd like to start with a quote from Nick himself, because in his Ponderosa video, he said, "I got blindsided and I deserved it."
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, Neil posted on Twitter that Nick was so surprised he didn't even remember to grab his bag when he stood up to have his torch snuffed at Tribal Council.
Yeah.
Like I had said, you know, that part of the blind side was true. But it brings up the question, what happened to put Nick in this position at his first and last Tribal Council?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did he go from thinking he had a good position in the game to being out the door? And of course, the big question, why did Nick lose?
All right. So rule number one is a survivor has to scheme and plot. We did see, especially in the post-merge, a lot of confessionals from Nick that he was scheming, he was plotting, he was thinking ahead. So I got to think Nick was scheming and plotting.
Yes, definitely. You know, he wrote blogs for you and focused quite a bit on strategy. So I
wrote them for us, David.
For all of us.
Yes.
For
the collective us.
That's right. Rob has a plan.
Not just for my enjoyment.
He might have, you know, before writing for you, he might have just wrote them for himself and then read them to himself as he stared in the mirror, you know.
That's how he got started.
That's right. I have no doubt that he understood the need to scheme and plot from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from the things he said in interviews, he was trying to make alliances with Michelle within the first few days. We know he was also trying to make plans with Anna, but the two of them could never quite reach accord in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going right from the start. And then when the tribe swapped, he continued to scheme and worked on, you know, Debbie, Neil, Jason, Michelle, pretty much everyone. He analyzed the situation, accurately saw where he stood with the various factions. But as had happened with the original Beauty Tribe, he was never put to the test. And then came the merge.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like Nick was in a pretty good position, and I think if Neil hadn't been medevaced, Nick probably would have been. But those extra 3 days changed everything for him.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to go from being the primary person doing the scheming to being schemed against. I mean, Don't get me wrong. He kept up his planning and he stayed on his toes, but he just got outplayed at that point, in part because he was waiting to make his move. You know, Debbie said on the show that she was hoping Nick would come around so they could take out one of the Braun guys. But when he didn't and Sydney approached them, well, as she said, the early bird catches the worm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a point that's interesting to me about how he was blindsided is that Michelle actually told Nick he was going to be the target.
Mm-hmm.
But Nick either didn't fully listen to the whole story or he didn't quite understand because he thought or assumed that she meant Jason or Scott were going to target him. So he ran back to them and checked in and no, the plan hadn't changed. He didn't realize it was Sydney and the Brains who were leading the charge against him.
Mm-hmm.
And Sydney's plan was apparently even active in her own mind before they had the immunity challenge. While Ty and Nick were saying too much about beating the Brains, Sydney told us in the Entertainment Weekly secret scene that she only had to beat one person, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
She beat him in that challenge and then beat him in his own game of plotting.
So let's talk about scheming and plotting too much, because I'm trying to ask about this, but not go into what we're going to talk about in the second rule, because I'm just thinking about with Nick, I wonder if he just came to the merge and did nothing. If he just said, you know, his strategy was, okay, I'm just going to do nothing. Would he still be here at this point?
Well, I guess the question is, if you do nothing, what does that mean? I mean, Joe is doing nothing and Joe is still here.
Because it seems to me where Sydney is like, boy, this Nick, like, I really can't stand him. When he's going up to Julie and saying, like, hey, what's going on the boat? You guys are talking about that. Like, it seemed to me like when he tried to be so active in trying to be a part of what Jason and Scott were doing, that seemed like that really rubbed Sydney the wrong way. And I'm wondering if he just really took his foot off the gas even more to the point where he just sort of was more of a bump on a log, a guy like, boy, Nick, he's up to nothing. He's really just, you know, he's completely floating in this game. He's got no strategy. He's not trying to make anything happen. Would he still be in the game at 10?
Probably, but...
Or I guess at 9.
Yeah, but that's not why he was there. I really do think we should go ahead and move on to the second rule.
Okay.
Because Nick himself said in interviews that he over-strategized, in part because he was just having too much fun. He was so happy to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So Nick didn't go there to be a bump on the log. He didn't go to be Purple Joe. He went to play the game, to strategize. And, you know, that may have led to a bit much scheming and plotting.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really see just how that affected his standing early on because he never went to tribal council until now.
Mm-hmm.
But as he said, once he got to the merge tribe, he was the pretty girl who everyone wanted to date. And he was having fun, I think, playing both sides,
mm-hmm.
which always brings the risk of over-scheming if you don't do it right. He was clearly providing information to, you know, both of those sides. We know he was talking to Neil, Debbie, Aubrey, Jason, Scott, Michelle, Julia, almost everyone, maybe everyone but Joe. And, you know, he might have been talking to Joe and Joe just couldn't hear him.
Mm-hmm.
But it does actually seem like he was okay when he was hanging out in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
It wasn't until he made his position crystal clear that it became problematic. Once he found himself solidly on that Braun side, he started viewing that as his current alliance, I guess, and seemed to want to protect himself and that group from any potential upsets. So that's why he was on his guard against Sydney creating something with Debbie, which, of course, leads to, you know, Nick wanting to check out with Julia to make sure nothing was going on when they had been out on that boat.
Mm-hmm.
The problem comes in how he did it. You can't pull someone aside like that in full view of the person you're talking about. And so clearly he failed to keep his scheming secret or his checking up of other people potentially scheming, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And to Sydney, he appeared to be plotting and scheming too much because, yeah. You know, Sydney felt he was possibly working against her.
Yeah.
So, you know, that led to Sydney asking, how stupid can you be?
Don't check me, boo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I think maybe what we need to say is that for Nick, you know, he really needs to reinforce to Julia and Michelle, like, hey, we're the beauties. It's the three of us. So what are you hearing over there? As opposed to making it feel like, hey, so I need to check in for what's good for Jason and Scott. We want to know you're not planning a girls' alliance, right?
Right, right. More of a teammate and less of a father figure.
Right. Because at the end of the day, to borrow a phrase from the Great Beast Mode Cowboy, like if Michelle and Julia decide, hey, we need to keep Nick around, it doesn't matter what Sydney wants to do.
Right, exactly. And the interesting thing here is that Nick knew he had to avoid public scheming because that's the problem he described with Debbie in all of his interviews. He liked her. He probably would have worked with her, except that she was being all friendly and pseudo flirty and somewhat scheming with him right out there in public. And he saw that that was a danger zone. And he had to sever ties with her in order to keep himself safe. But I think that he missed while he was severing ties with Debbie, he was making new ones with Jason and Scott, which was sending up red flags to Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of not really understanding quite what he was doing, I also didn't understand why Nick would spill all those beans to Aubrey.
Yeah.
Now, as it turns out, according to him, you know, the timing was a little different on the show than the way it happened. Because it happened after Aubrey had already decided to vote him out.
Mm-hmm.
But even if it hadn't, I feel like Nick was giving away way too much information. He was trying to gain her trust, I guess, and as he said, get her indebted to him. But I just feel like he was doing so at great risk because she could have used that information against him if there already hadn't been a bigger plan against him in the works.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, overall, I would agree with what Nick himself said. He did indeed over-strategize and did it in too obvious a manner.
Okay. Rule number three is to be flexible. We saw a lot of flexibility on Nick's part in the episode prior to this when he really was the pretty girl at the dance. He was really, was he going to go with the jocks or was he going to go with the valedictorian? And we saw him really flirting with both sides. I don't feel like that Nick had an issue with being flexible. What do you think?
I think you're right. He did maintain that flexibility as long as he reasonably could. And even after he chose his side, he said in interviews that he had plans to turn against them when it was beneficial to do so. He was not going to make the cardinal mistake of just latching on, trying to ride it to the end, because he probably realized he couldn't do so. He knew the only way to move forward was to jump around a bit, take out the biggest threats. So his plan, as he described it in interviews, was to move back and forth between the bronze and the brains to blindside people on each side. He just didn't plan on somebody else making a move to do that same thing to him this soon.
All right. Rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. First, does Nick have emotions?
I don't know. At least it wasn't clear in the early goings. I think he has shown since then that he does.
But, yes. Ponderosa, he looked like he had emotions.
Right. But he even said that according to his friends, he's a cold-blooded robot.
Yes.
So I'd hate to hear what his enemies say. But, you know, certainly he didn't seem to understand the emotions of others too well, at least mm-hmm. again in those early goings, such as when Ty got upset over the killing of the chicken.
Yeah.
So it should come as no surprise that Nick didn't have any problems when it came to not letting his emotions control him. Indeed, Nick even said he loves the sociopathic nature of the game.
Yes.
Perfect for him. We could see that when we look at which side he ended up choosing, at least for now. I feel like if he'd gone according to who he liked more, he would have sided with Neil, Aubrey, and Debbie. I mean, wouldn't you rather be with someone who compared you to a Greek god?
Yes. I wouldn't know, David, yeah. Unless there's some sort of Greek god of podcasting.
There should be.
Yeah, that sounds nice. I mean, I don't know. Why? How did Jason and Scott describe him?
I don't know, but certainly not as a Greek god.
No. Probably not.
So he instead, though, went with those he thought gave him the best chance at moving forward in the game.
Yeah.
I would say the only part of his game that might have been affected by his emotions was the way he dealt with Michelle. But I think it's more appropriate to deal with that as we move on to rule five.
Okay. Rule number five is pretend to be nice. Play the social game. keep your politics and your controversial beliefs to yourself.
Right. So we might as well start right away again with the Michelle situation.
Yes.
So Nick has admitted that his early communications with Michelle were not handled in a great way, and that made it difficult to form a solid basis for a later relationship. In case anyone hasn't already heard what he said, he talked about how he saw her audition video on YouTube and expected her to act in a certain way, then reacted poorly when she didn't. Mm-hmm. He, you know, now fully admits it was his own fault for acting that way, but at the time, that didn't really help him. So we saw Nick telling Michelle that she was the brains target at the Swap Tribe, and we know she didn't react well to that.
Bro, I know.
But apparently he'd had a similar interaction with her in the first few days of the game when Anna and Julia wanted her out because they hadn't become her allies yet. He tried to protect her and she seemingly resented him for it multiple times.
I don't need to be carried, bro.
Right. And then she repaid him by turning on him. So, you know, Nick said since then, you know, he put too much pressure on her and he feels like he made her push back. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, earlier I said he was acting in almost a fatherly manner.
Yeah.
Well, judging by a tweet Michelle sent this week, I have to wonder if she felt Nick was trying to control her in other ways as well, because she tweeted at him and asked, "Now that I voted you out, who is going to manage my alcohol intake on rewards?"
Hmm.
Yeah. Ouch. Ouch. That really sounds like she felt he was being a little too controlling there.
Yeah.
So.
And we don't want to know in what direction he was managing the alcohol intake.
Well, I took it as being
whether
like,
it was put that down or, hey, here's another.
Yeah, I'm going to go with put that down.
Yes, hopefully. You know. Hopefully.
Okay, even beyond Michelle, we did see hints from the very beginning that Nick wasn't quite as good at faking emotions as he may have thought. At Ponderosa, he said he spent a lot of time in the game listening to people he didn't really want to hear. And I'm sure he thought he was being a good listener. But based on what we saw earlier, I'm not really sure that it worked.
Yeah.
And indeed, we were led to believe by the editing that if the Beauty Tribe had lost immunity in the early goings, but after Michelle had joined up with Anna and Julia, that he was a likely target for this reason. But no matter how well he did at listening, it eventually got to him. And by his own admission, he got a bit antisocial near the end of his time there. He started going into the water by himself, going to bed early, etc. And he said, "I love myself so I can keep myself company."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great skill to have in the real world, but maybe not so good on Survivor.
Right. It's hard. You know, it's 39 days of having to, you know, really be like at this party that maybe you don't even want to be at after a while. Yeah. Like, you know, make small talk and listen to everybody tell the same stories over and over again. I think that we lose that when we watch the game on TV.
It kind of reminds me, I was at a poker game last night and someone told this very short story and it involved a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And this other guy, a very blowhard type guy, said, "Oh, that reminds me of something that happened to me," and proceeds to tell us this super long, drawn out story about his family and all sorts of crazy things that in the end ended up with a lawyer. That was the only similarity. And by the end of it, literally no one was paying attention to him. And I'm sitting there thinking, I kind of feel bad for the guy because no one's paying attention. But on the other hand, he kind of brought it on himself. And just putting that into the context of Survivor, you know, where you have to pretend to listen to a story like that and care. Mm-hmm. It's got to be difficult.
Rule number 6 is don't be too much of a threat. How did Nick deal with that? Not great, I don't think. He was a threat.
Yeah, I don't think that anyone would doubt that Nick could have been a threat in this game if he'd stuck around. But then the question is, what about right at this moment? Mm-hmm. Was he so much of a threat that it was worth going after him at this point? And I think that depends on your perspective as a player. Clearly, everybody was a threat to the brains, so any plan that involved targeting anyone else was A-okay for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the key here is that Nick was also a threat to Sydney.
Yes.
Looking at it through her eyes, Nick had a chance of supplanting her in the Braun Alliance. She even told Michelle and Julia, now that is the person who is extremely up Jason and Scott's butt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just don't think there was any way she was going to let that continue.
Yeah.
Even if she doesn't want to go back to Jason and Scott, but wants to stay with the women, Nick still would have posed a threat to her because, well, if she's staying with the women, well, one, he's a man. Two, he was sort of in an alliance with two of the women she wanted to bring over.
Mm-hmm.
And three, he had challenge skills.
Yeah.
You know, so she went ahead and made this move at an unorthodox time, as we had mentioned. You've often talked about, again, how Final 10 is not the time when you generally expect someone to make a move. Mm-hmm. But last week, Nick himself said, when everybody feels safe is when you do your damage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when Sydney decided to do her damage, make her move, take out a threat before he got a position where he might try to take her out. And given what Debbie said about the early bird, it looks like she was correct to do so, at least for now.
Rule number 7 is to vote out the weak and then the strong, then the weak and then the strong. So do you feel like that this keeps in line with that, that Nick was a strong player to get out here?
Yes, definitely. This was the first vote of the merge, so it was time to take out a strong opponent. He'd already shown himself to be capable of doing well in challenges. You know, he won the first immunity challenge for all the good it did him. And he held on for a good long time in the second one. On top of that, Nick was also strong in the second sense in that it was possible he would be able to organize others. You know, we already saw him trying to move against the Women's Alliance before it even formed. If he had been allowed to stay, he could have potentially solidified himself more with the beauty women and taken them out of play for Sydney and the Brains. Because like you said a little while ago, without Michelle and Julia, Sydney's plan doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. And I think no matter who went home in this spot, whether it was Debbie, whether it was Aubrey, whether it was Nick, I think we're talking about getting rid of a strong player. So everybody is thinking about threats at this point.
Yeah, right. Nobody was saying, hey, let's get rid of Joe.
Right, right.
Yeah, Joe's just going to sleep himself into the finale.
Hey, look, that's I said this earlier in the show about Nick. If Nick would have just come in into this merge and just seemed like, hey, I'm just going to go to sleep, like he was down on like, oh, I'm just going to go to sleep now. Maybe he's still around.
That's right. If he had just spent all day staring at his reflection in the water, he'd have been fine.
Yeah. So that's a different Greek god, I think.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Not the Greek god that he was going for.
No.
But I do think that there is something to at least having that perception.
The perception of not being terribly active?
Yeah. I mean, if nobody thinks that you're threatening, I think that coming into the merge, I don't think that your name comes up.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it comes down to
how
your
do you do something and make it look like you're doing nothing. It's the opposite of George Costanza, who says, oh, if I just look annoyed all the time, people will think I'm busy. And so he's doing nothing and makes it look like he's doing something. Ideally, you want to be doing something and make it look like you're doing nothing.
You really have to be pulling the strings from, you know, hiding behind the curtain there. I know I'm mixing metaphors, but yeah, you really have to do it without showing your hand at all. And that's hard to do.
Because, I mean, in Nick's situation of playing both sides, like he really has to, you know, you have to work really hard to play both sides. But in that case, you really have to make it look like you're not at all. And you really have a sort of just going back to that idea of the bump on a log. And unfortunately, you know, he was he should at least reveal that side to Sydney, where she's seeing him, you know, going up to her side and then going up to the people on the other side. And so I think that for her, she really did see how hard he was working.
Right, right. And I just don't know. I mean, unless he just comes into the merge, goes to Jason and Scott and says, I'm with you. I'm just going to sit here. Tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then waits a little while. And then, you know, when he finds the right moment, he approaches the other side, whatever's left of the other side, and tries to do the same thing. But would they trust him then? Mm-hmm. If he had not been working with them at all, or you know, at least talking to them. Do you trust someone at that point, or do you just say, yeah, right, okay, go back over there with your buddies?
I also think it's a thing where, you know, you go to an office or something like that, and, you know, you only are nice to, you know, like, okay, here's like the CEO and the CFO. And, you know, it seemed like he's put in a lot of time there with the bosses of the brainstorm, but didn't like spend a lot of time like with the administrative staff, which was Sydney. And, you know, she is like, you know, that she was the person who was lobbying against me. So he didn't do a good job of, you know, winning her over. He might have won over Jason and Scott, but he didn't win over Sydney.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been that he just thought that Sydney was a loyal follower. He misread her in that regard and thought, well, okay, if I'm good with Jason and Scott, I'm good with her because she's good with Jason and Scott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, definite misread on his part. And it goes to, you know, some things that Sydney had said earlier in the show, like people are underestimating me. They look at me and they don't know what I'm capable of. And she seems to have now, you know, turned into a butterfly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. She's left her cocoon.
All right. So then in terms of the appendices, do whatever it takes to get idols. We didn't really see Nick involved too much in the hunting for the hidden immunity idol.
No, he said in interviews that he went idol hunting with Ty early in the game. Mm-hmm. So we know he was at least trying somewhat, but we have no information that he did anything beyond that. You know, later on, we know that he knew about at least Ty's idol. He probably knew about Neil's idol because everybody believed they knew about Neil's idol. And he might have even deduced that Jason had an idol. So he may have just figured it wasn't worth doing much searching anymore and, you know, just spent his time talking or looking at a reflection or whatever.
All right. So then the second appendix is the jury phase of the game and getting set for the final tribal council. How is Nick doing there?
Well, I don't think that the vote itself had anything to do with worrying about who will be on the jury. I do think that he was kind of planting some seeds that would have helped him if he had made it to the end. But then on the other hand, if he had bounced back and forth, like he said, he would have ended up pissing off almost everybody on the jury. So it didn't matter, you know, for him, and it didn't matter for those who voted against him in this case.
All right. So we've gone through all of the rules and have gotten a picture about what Nick was doing. So ultimately, David, why did Nick lose?
Well, you know, immediately after being voted out, Nick said, I deserve it. I was beyond confident tonight. This was a blindside for sure. I just didn't see what they were pulling, and I have to give them props for that. Now, I applaud Nick for treating Survivor like the game it is and acknowledging when he was just beaten rather than being all bitter about it. And, you know, he even impressed Corinne and Eliza with his humble parting words.
Okay. Not easy to do.
No. But he gave credit to Aubrey, Debbie, and Joe, who he thought had gotten themselves out of a jam with the girls flipping. And he was partially right. The move certainly helped the Brains, but the move started with Sydney. And while the Brains were all too happy to join in, the move never could have happened without his own beauty allies, Michelle and Julia, turning on him. Mm-hmm. Nick knows what he should have been doing and was a good judge in hindsight about where he went wrong. He knew he needed to scheme and plot, but looking back, he also admits he did too much of it and made a couple key mistakes in being too obvious about it. He knew he needed to be flexible. He knew he had to play the strategy part of the game without emotions, but the difficult part was allowing his own emotions to show through so the other players could get a warmer and fuzzier feeling about him. Instead, they saw arrogance and overconfidence. Even though he had said he was arrogant in a fun way, they didn't see the parts of his personality that they say are more fun.
Right. It was always fun for him.
Right. And I do know what he means. You know, I understand that personality. I'm just afraid that on a game like Survivor, it's hard to project the fun part without people getting turned off by the arrogant part.
Yeah, I think arrogance is always fun for the arrogant-er. It's always less fun for the arrogant-ee.
I think it's possible to be fun for both, but maybe not in a situation like Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
it is funny because many players immediately talk about how they were voted out because they were a threat. I mean, almost every week we hear that. But Nick didn't. He actually was a pretty classic threat at this point in the game, though. He was good in challenges, and he had the potential to turn on people. It was a combination of all of these things that posed problems for Nick. To Sydney, he was arrogant, over-scheming, and a threat to her place in the game. Debbie and others shared in the feelings about his arrogance and couldn't wait for him to make a move with them, so they had to join in a move against him. But I think most importantly to Michelle, the one who had to flip to make it all happen, he had problems in the area of the social game. Any of these issues alone might not have been enough to turn the tide against him, but when they're all combined together, we see why Nick lost.
Bro, I know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So Nick is gone. We're down to nine. We talked so much about, was this a good move? Was this a great move? Was it not such a great move? David, we're going to find out, at least in the short term, just how great of an idea this was for Sydney and what the fallout is going to be this Wednesday night. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, you mentioned the long term, and I want to talk about that first, because as I've listened to you discuss these moves with Steve and Cass and others, I find myself siding solidly with you.
Oh, because I've had a very unpopular opinion. I've read many comments that I have my head up my butt on this one.
Well, I was going to say I'm up there with you, but no, that's not a pretty picture. So, I mean, Sydney did initiate the play, but I think it helps Michelle and Julia more. Mostly Michelle, because I just don't see much gameplay coming from Julia. And I think it was mentioned on one of the podcasts this week. It was interesting that we heard from Michelle, not Sydney, regarding how this move would help her make a case later in the game at the end. It's funny because Steven was saying just a week ago that Michelle had a winner's edit. And so I kind of felt like he was arguing against himself when he took Sydney's side here. I see this as contributing to Michelle's potential winner edit, not Sydney's.
You know, and I haven't really factored winner's edit into the equation in terms of, you know, how I'm looking at this. I'm just talking about it from a numbers perspective. I think that this really opens up the doors to a lot of craziness to happen. I almost feel like in some ways that last season when Steven and Jeremy and Spencer voted with the witches to vote out Kelly Wigglesworth, I really didn't understand that. Now, for Jeremy, he ends up winning the game. But for Steven, I do think that it disrupted some things. And really, it was like, boy, I don't know what's going to happen now at this point. And so it really, I think it has opened up the door to, I think that where I think things were a lot more controlled before this. And now I think that any number of things could happen from this point out.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to make a prediction for this week. But, you know, as of right now, we have a couple commercials focusing on the reactions of Jason and Scott to the vote.
How are they taking it?
Yeah, not well.
Okay.
Let's just say not well. But, you know, but then the commercial goes on to make it sound like Julia is the likely target, with Aubrey telling us, you know, very seriously how sometimes the guy in the middle of the road gets run over. And the question comes, as it always does with these commercials, is it a red herring or a real look at what's to come? If it's a real preview, it is hard to wrap my mind around everybody going after Julia, but it's possible. I don't think Michelle would be okay going after Julia, but I didn't think she'd be okay going after Nick. So, you know, I'm not sure.
But
that,
in that scenario, I mean, do you really see a Christy Smith type scenario where Julia and Michelle are in the middle and that all of a sudden that the brains and then the Jason and the Scott and Ty side are going to all come together and say, you know what, Julia, you can't pick a side. It's you.
I guess it's possible.
It would seem one of the more unlikely things to have happened on the show in the last few years.
Yeah, but I mean, do Sydney and the brains need Michelle? I don't know that they do if they have Ty on their side. Now, we don't really know what side Ty is on because I'm not sure Ty knows what side Ty is on.
Nick doesn't know what side Ty is on. True. That's what Ty has said.
But if Ty goes with Sydney and the Brains, then, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not Michelle would be willing to sacrifice Julie, which I don't think she is.
Mm-hmm. But there's almost no connective tissue to put Ty with them. I mean, who is his ally? Who has he worked with over there? I mean, he was on the tribe with Aubrey and Joe, but I would find it very hard to imagine that he's abandoning Jason and Scott to go and vote with Aubrey and Joe at this point in the game. And Sydney.
Hey, come on. Debbie told him he was in their alliance.
I guess so.
And he does what he's told.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the Ty thing is such a mystery going into this week.
Okay, but here's another mystery for you. Does Sydney even want to target Jason and Scott?
Mm-hmm.
Because was she upset that Nick was getting too close to them? If so, then she would theoretically want to jump back to Jason and Scott if they'll have her.
Mm-hmm.
Or did she really want to do another thing she said, which was keep the women together because she thinks she'll have a better chance against them going forward?
Yeah.
If that's the case, then she's going to want to solidify their ranks to target Jason or Scott. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. If she really wanted Jason out, why wouldn't she have just picked him in this vote instead of Nick? There was every reason to do it. She knows he has an idol. If she wanted to blindside him and get rid of him with the idol in his pocket, that was the perfect time. Jason and Scott clearly had no idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different for Jason, because in the early goings, I had praised him for knowing everything that was going on in his camp. And
yeah,
clearly that's not the case anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I don't know.
It would have been at least as easy, if not easier, to get the Brains and Beauty women to go after Jason. So the fact that she didn't go in that direction makes me think she wants to leave the Jason and Scott avenue still open.
Yeah.
So, okay, now what? Does she stay with this new alliance? Does she go back to the two guys who are apparently now going to be causing havoc around camp? Does she try to play the middle? Does she have her new alliance target Jason while knowing that Jason will use the idol? And then she tells Jason that he's going to be targeted, so he uses the idol, but not on her. I mean, then things really get difficult to wrap your brain around. The problem is there isn't much to go on. And the only hint that Jeff Probst gave was in his Entertainment Weekly interview. He said the compass of morality stares Ty straight in the face.
Okay.
I have no idea what that means.
To me, that sounds like that Jason and Scott are going to tantrum, and then Ty is going to say, boy, you know, I love all life. I don't like how these guys are acting. Do I vote with them or do I vote with everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, it could be that. It could be about whether he tells the truth that he was the one who voted Jason. It could it could be if Scott wants his half of the super idol at tribal council and he has to decide, or it could.
I don't know if that's morality though.
Well, it could be.
That strikes me more as strategy than morality.
Well, if he, you know, if Scott like tries to strike a chord with him, we're friends, you know, we work together. I mean, the other, you know, possibility is if they want to kill the chicken and he doesn't let them.
Oh,
yeah. No.
So, you know, with the previews so focused on Scott and Jason and Julia, I am starting to, you know, fall prey to their hypnosis here and feel like maybe there actually is something to it. Call me gullible. I don't know. I just don't see who else is in danger right now unless an idol is used. And I feel like an idol use, you know, kind of like you had said last week, if there's an idol use, there'd be more to it. Jeff would be talking about it. A preview would be talking about it. You know, I don't know. Maybe they had the wrong preview going and this is the one we'll be blindsided on.
Mm-hmm.
But with all of this, I'm going to circle back and I'm going to say Julia is leaving.
Julia.
I know it's a weird one.
That's a weird one. I don't agree with that. I feel like that they're sort of swing votes in the middle and it's going to come down to what are they going to do? I mean, I think that there's only a couple of different possibilities. It really comes down to me, you know, and I hate to use voting blocks, but I think that that's
units,
sort of what we're
looking
at.
Voting units.
Voting units here. So I feel like that either we're going to have, you know, the Jason and Scott side. I think either they will be able to pull Michelle and Julia back. And in that case, I could see them being vindictive. I could see Sydney potentially being the person who goes home. I feel like that you could have where the women's thing holds. And I think that if that's the case, I could see Scott, considering that he doesn't have the idol, either you could see potentially a 3-3 split where that group of six, which is the women plus Joe, if they split their votes 3-3, they could flush potentially Jason's idol and then ultimately target Jason either on the revote or Scott on the revote, depending on if Jason plays his idol or not. So I think that Scott is somebody who could be going home. I just don't see the scenario where it's one of the beauties. I think that it really would come down to me, it's either, you know, some combination of Scott and Jason, or if the women come back, if Michelle and Julia come back to Jason and Scott. I mean, you could have the scenario also where Sydney goes back with Jason and Scott if they work that out, and then they go after Debbie or Aubrey at that point. But I really feel like that Sydney is very confident about, if I end up with just the women and Joe at the final six, I can win, you know, 4 out of the last 5 immunities, or however many immunities are left, 3 out of the last 4. And I think that she feels like that she can win her way into the finals from that point.
Yeah, that's a possibility. So basically, I picked Julia and you said almost anybody but Julia.
I don't see that scenario. I'll say Scott.
It's possible. Yeah, I do see what you're saying. So Scott and Jason, if they don't pull anyone back,
mm-hmm.
then they target Scott, and Scott looks at Jason and Ty and says, "Super idol me." And mm-hmm. I don't know, does Jason do it, or does Jason look at that and say,
and then
I'm next?
And then Scott says, Ty, give me your half of the idol. And Ty says,
No.
And then Scott's like, "You're a bad friend, Ty."
And then he shoots a basket with him.
Yeah, that's it. This bromance is over.
Yeah, I don't know. Then poor Ty is only left with the chicken for the bromance.
That's right. Poor Ty. So I think it'll be a very exciting episode this week.
It could be. Certainly lots of things up in the air.
And I'm just rooting for no medevac for the live show.
Yes.
That's really what it comes down to for me.
Yeah, well, there was no hint of it. So that's good.
No medevac, and that forces us to not have a tribal council. That's all I'm hoping for.
Yeah, it would not be a good live show.
Right. All right. Well, David, lots of fun stuff to chew on before we get to Wednesday night's show. And so do you have a hashtag for this episode?
I think it has to be Greek God, doesn't it?
Greek God. Okay. We'll be watching very closely to see what else you might uncover on Twitter. You could follow David Bloomberg on Twitter @DavidBloomberg. And he will be chatting it up with the contestants moving forward every single week. And then next week we will get into why the next player lost the game as we head into, can you believe it? This is going to be episode 9. And then next week we get to double digit episode 10.
Yeah, it's moving quickly here.
Boom. We're almost there.
We are.
Yeah. By the time we talk next week, it'll be about a month until the finale.
Wow. That's hard to believe.
Who knew? All right. So, David, great stuff as usual. Of course, you could listen to all of our other podcasts if you've missed any of them. The Wiggle Room, the exit interview with Nick, the podcast with Cass, voicemails with Akiva, know-it-alls, the works. That's all available for you. Plus, we're going to have News AF with Tyson and Danny. That's going to be coming up in between then. And then, of course, no live know-it-alls this week as we're going to be together in person. But we will have the podcast and the video up for you guys as soon as possible going into another week of Survivor Podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robswebsite.com/iTunes or search for RHAP in your favorite podcatcher. David, anything else?
No. Just hope everyone has fun at the live show and wish I could be there.
Okay. All right, everybody. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.